We haven't even started.
Okay, cool.
Now help me understand this.
I don't even understand that question.
What?
Good, so this is a great introduction.
We talked about the big picture and the small picture. We haven't even started, which is sort of why we're here.
Life happens.
You heard it here first, folks.
It never ends and it never starts.
We're starting. We felt very intelligent. We said things that sounded a little pretentious. It was great.
Welcome to Self-Talk. Welcome back to Self-Talk. Welcome to Self-Talk.
Hello. Welcome to Self-Talk. We're starting Self-Talk.
Hi, this is Perry Self. Welcome to Self-Talk.
Hello, I'm Sean Self.
And now...
for Self-Talk!
Yay! We have no idea what we want to talk about, but we did want to have some time to chat again because it's been forever.
It has been forever.
Yeah. So we talked about all these different things. Like, I was curious, just personally, the one that I brought up about your take on, because we just had an election, and what it feels like for you. Like, does your vote matter? Is it important for you to vote?
I at the current moment, don't feel like my vote matters because of the gridlock that the country is in right now. I feel like whichever party I vote for, no matter who gets into office, is just going to get booted. They're just going to get rejected every step of the way. So until someone comes along who's able to break this gridlock somehow, or until this gridlock breaks because they decide the system needs to be redone or whatever, no, I don't feel like my vote matters.
Well, that's the conventional wisdom, and I know a lot of people feel that way. And then the sort of conventional response is, well, then if you don't vote, then you don't get any say. Only the people who vote get the say.
Yeah, but I don't feel like the people who are voting are getting any say either.
Well, someone seems to think they are because, boy, they sure spend a lot of money on it. And I don't think they'd spend that amount of money if they didn't think they were getting something for it.
Well, they're getting insane amounts of power and they're getting a lot of money for it. By spending, it's an investment because they're getting that office, which is one of the most powerful offices, and then they get richer than they already were.
Yeah, I heard something on the radio on the way home tonight, and I don't even know who it was. There was some divorce settlement, and the wife will be getting $7 million a month.
Yeah.
And I couldn't, that just blows my mind.
Yeah. I am pretty cynical about marriage. I want to get married, but mostly just because there are some very important benefits granted through marriage, like, your spouse having access to you if something happens during an emergency, and financial benefits. But marriage as an institution, I really have a lot of problems with, starting with the fact that, like most of the institutions that exist today, it's ancient. And so when it was invented, there's a comedian who talks about this, and he says, my parents have been married for 40 years. When people, conceived marriage, I don't think that they ever intended for people to be married for 40 years, because when it was conceived, people lived for 40 years if they were lucky.
That's funny.
It's just this like insane amount of time that you're expected to spend with one person. So that first of all is just that marriage is just a really, really, I don't know. It seems unrealistic to expect two people to be able to do that.
So you just think you should stay together until you don't want to stay together anymore, and then find other legal means to get those benefits you talked about?
I mean, possibly. I don't know. I'm very much a romantic, so in a lot of ways, on the other end of the spectrum, I really...
Wow, that you're talking the total opposite of romanticism.
I know. On the opposite end of the spectrum, I really love the idea of getting married, and I love the idea of monogamy, together forever, etc. But...
And they lived happily ever after.
Yeah. I mean, that's going a little too far, even for my romantic side.
Of course, Into the Woods deals with what happens after happily ever after.
That's right.
Which is coming out pretty soon.
Yeah.
Talking about movies.
Okay.
Christopher Nolan. What is it about, because I know he's your favorite, and
yeah,
you love his work. What is it about his work that you notice and that you like?
Oh, my goodness. There's so many things. I mean, I've already been talking a lot. I could go for hours talking about the things I love about his work. You can start with just the aesthetic of his work.
Yeah, can you? Because it was interesting to me. We watched one movie one time.
Transcendence.
You said, this is a Christopher Nolan movie. And I said, how do you know that? And you said, I can just tell.
Well, and it's funny because it wasn't a Christopher Nolan movie. Transcendence is by someone else. But so I looked it up on IMDb because it was just so uncanny how similar to his work it was. And it turns out that it was his cinematographer. It was his debut directing gig.
Ah.
And so it was really cool. I felt cool.
Yeah.
So I mean that's a big thing. Is obviously the cinematographer in film is largely responsible for the aesthetic of the film. And so Christopher Nolan has a very distinctive aesthetic. And I don't know, it's hard to describe. I mean, it's slow. The pans and such are slow, and at the same time, I think that the cuts are very quick. So there's a slow movement of the camera, and yet very quick cuts. Just talking as technically as I can about this because I haven't studied film.
Yeah, it's just what you noticed, though.
Yeah,
from having watched it,
and then very dark ambiance always.
Ambiance or milieu? Right? I don't know.
What is milieu?
I don't even know. It was a great sounding word, wasn't it?
Oh, okay. Extra credit.
but the atmosphere.
Ambiance, isn't ambiance atmosphere?
I guess, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that makes sense. So like the atmosphere that...
For sure. It's always very sort of dark and cloudy. Can't see everything. But like that's how he wants it.
Right. Okay. Cool. I just also thought I'd bring up... Daniel's opening night tonight in White Christmas. He's touring the country tonight. That's why he's not with us.
Where's the opening tonight?
Peoria, Illinois.
Okay, so if you live in Peoria, Illinois, and you listen to this before we release it, because...
How can they listen to it before we release
it? Well, because I was going
to
say...
You mean listen to it before he leaves Peoria.
Okay, cool. So, yeah, if you live in Peoria and you hear this... Go see Daniel Self.
Irving Berlin's White Christmas, yes.
Irving Berlin's White Christmas.
And then we got a show opening at the high school. Tomorrow night's the final dress rehearsal.
So if you live in the Antelope Valley, you can go see that.
Okay, yes.
And the date today is the 11th?
Today is the 11th, Veterans Day, yes.
Veterans Day, yeah.
And thank you to all you have served that are out there. I did have an interesting comment because... a friend on Facebook that lives here wrote in at one point because I was saying that we were going to let veterans in for free and an active military.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that.
And he said, what about those of us, I think he said us, so I don't know if he actually did this, that went to Canada or were conscientious objectors, will you let us in for free? I thought, whoa, what a concept.
Who are conscientious objectors?
Yeah.
Whoa.
And I thought because they were acting on their conscience too, why don't we honor their stand that they took? And it's really kept me thinking and it really informed my director's notes. But boy, it sure brought up the other side of the issue and has been food for thought for me.
Well, yeah, I mean, and this is a discussion that we've had, you know, off the air quite a lot, is the issue of war and by extension the issue of violence. And it's certainly a puzzle.
Well, they had... On the radio here tonight, because it was Veterans Day, they were talking about it's not accepted by the Veterans Administration yet, but one of their doctors has started diagnosing and kind of treating vets with what he calls moral damage. And he said basically it deals with them doing and seeing things that were totally right in the moment. Like you're in a big firefight, which that means, you know, they're shooting at you and you're shooting back and you're pinned down and all of this.
Right.
And someone comes around the corner shooting at you and you kill them and find out they're a 13-year-old
right.
that was trying to kill you.
Right.
And the morality that comes up with, okay, yes, he was trying to kill me, but this is a child, and that dissonance when you come back into civil society where that kind of thing is frowned upon, killing children, but you did the totally right thing in the worst circumstances. And they're starting to deal with that and find new methodologies to deal with the moral damage of war.
Huh.
I found that very interesting.
Yeah, the Army certainly has an interesting way with covering up the clear objections to regular morality. You know, like how for most people, killing is wrong. However, on a large scale, it's totally fine. It's encouraged and we've done it all throughout history.
We have, I think, what's changed in the modern from Vietnam on, maybe even from Korea on. But, you know, World War II, we were fighting this evil that was trying to take over the world. That was their stated aim. And they were working on doing that.
Right.
But we were fighting armies that were traditionally organized armies, and you could clearly defeat the enemy.
And we really haven't fought a war like that since.
No. And when you're dealing with guerrilla warfare, and when it's civilian soldiers...
Yeah. Or even not guerrilla warfare. There's a whole other type of warfare that, like, I don't think they've deemed in history books yet, but it's like, we now fight puppet warfare, where we just use our, like, quote-unquote colonies, which don't exist anymore, but they totally do, to fight for us. And we never fire bullets at each other. Like, throughout the entire Cold War, bullets were never fired between America and Russia. And yet...
Or China. Because in Vietnam, it was the Chinese supporting them, but nobody admitted that.
Right.
Which is in a piece of my heart.
Oh, well,
ironically,
see,
yes.
If you come, you will also get educated. So.
That's right. Yes and no, but... Iran, Afghanistan, we were there. We were fighting.
Well, right, but that's I was talking about the Cold War.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that was a different kind of... But it was us fighting. We were there. We were in Korea. We were in Vietnam, which
were... Yeah, but we weren't fighting each other. The two...
Directly.
Exactly.
Right.
The two actual people who had conflict weren't fighting each other. It was all of these middlemen
surrogates.
Matching up. And yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
But I mean, what, like, as someone who I've always gotten the impression that to a certain extent you agree with the idea of war and
well, what do you mean by I agree with war?
Well,
war's a good thing. Yeah, let's go start
no,
one.
No, no, no. That, I mean, that's what I was saying. Is to a certain extent you find it to be necessary.
Got it. I think given the world we live in, unless you're willing to be subjugated by someone else. Yes, there are people who are willing to use force to get what they want.
Right.
And so if you're unwilling to fight that, I think the only way to fight that is with force.
Okay. And so what do you say about the exceptions to that statement?
I don't know what you mean by that.
Well, you were saying there are people who are willing to take what they want by force, and the only way to fight that is by force. What about Gandhi, Martin Luther King, et cetera?
Well... yeah, it's the et cetera. I don't think there are many et ceteras because
I think
they are such exceptional, in the real sense of the word, examples.
But it proves that it is possible.
In some circumstances. And the interesting thing, I think I've had this conversation with you. I heard someone else say this the other day, and it was the first other person. And I thought, okay, well, it was an original thought to me, but maybe I'm not the first one to have this.
For sure.
That... I wonder if Martin Luther King would have been so effective if it hadn't been for groups like the Black Panthers.
But that's the thing, is groups like the Black Panthers always exist because we live in a violent world.
Right.
So why are we looking at that nonviolence wouldn't have worked if it hadn't been for the violence when violence always exists? Like what value does that have? Violence does exist, and that's what we're trying to...
Well, one of the things to point out that just occurred to me was in the example of Gandhi and Martin Luther King,
yeah.
You're looking at oppressed groups of people.
Yeah.
So unless we're willing to go to the oppressed state, I mean, I cannot imagine our soldiers nonviolently resisting the Nazis. They would have just wiped us out. And taken over and run the country, and I just don't see how that works in all situations. I think it takes exceptional situations.
So you don't think that in the case of World War II, people were being oppressed?
What I'm saying is America wasn't oppressed.
America wasn't oppressed, but
right.
millions of people throughout the rest of the world were.
Right, but the other thing that was slightly different... I don't know. I'm just kind of thinking of this as we're going through it. But that the Nazis were actively aggressing
yes.
and taking over areas. The British aggression had already occurred when they took over India. The
yeah, but they were...
forced slavery had already occurred by the time we got to the 60s. So you didn't have soldiers bayoneting black people on the streets. You had them being oppressed.
Oh, but you had people, you know, lynching black people constantly. That's what. Why is that kind of aggression less legitimate than?
No, I'm not saying it's less legitimate, but I'm wondering if there's something. I don't know. I'm just trying to think through this and wondering. From your question, you know, how it would have worked if we'd nonviolently resisted Hitler.
Right.
I mean, it might have led to him literally taking over the whole world. And then somehow, through a course of nonviolent resistance over I don't know how long, that might have ended. But part of what helped Gandhi work and what helped Martin Luther King, their whole foundation is appealing to the moral legitimacy of the world and saying, look, these oppressors are no longer, but if Hitler ruled the whole world, he didn't care.
No, of course.
If anyone thought he was legitimate or not, I run the world.
Of course he didn't care, but the rest of the world would. You're not trying to appeal to Hitler's sense of morality. That's the point. Gandhi wasn't, I mean, to a certain extent he was because he believed that
he was appealing to the soldiers and saying eventually their morality will get them to stop beating us.
But at the same time he was also appealing to the rest of the world. And in my opinion, I think that.
But notice the rest of the world wasn't oppressed by Britain. They were independent powers, and they wouldn't be independent powers if they were under Hitler's thumb.
But regardless, they are the rest of the world. I mean, sure, let's say Hitler took over the whole world. There are still people who exist in the world who are not happy under Hitler's rule. You start appealing to these people's sense of morality, and things start changing. Things start happening.
How?
I think that.
And this is really bizarre for me to be on this side of the argument, because I totally believe that saying that war is hell.
Right.
And that people that go through war come out of it changed forever because they've been engaged in something that we find morally wrong, most of us. They have killed.
Right.
Now, it's been sanctioned by the society. Oh, you're a soldier. It's okay within certain parameters.
Right.
And there's international guidelines and rules that now we're skirting like crazy because we're not really fighting soldiers anymore.
Right.
But it's really bizarre for me to be talking about, I think as long as we have human beings, we're going to have war. And that I would much rather not be ruled by Putin or by China and then have to nonviolently resist.
Yeah, In the first place. I feel like asking how would the world change is a question that is impossible to answer. I think that if you asked Martin Luther King, hey, how is this going to change things? How is this nonviolent protest going to evolve and end? I think you would say, I have no idea. I'm just trying to do what I feel is right.
Okay.
And so
I can buy that.
Okay.
I get that. I just can't wrap my head around how that would work in a real world. I know I've mentioned this to you, but Aldous Huxley wrote the book Island about a utopia, and they did not believe in violence.
Well, but we've talked about this before.
They allowed. Now, the book ends before you can see what happens afterwards.
Right.
But the book ends with them being taken over by a neighboring country because they won't fight them.
But again, we've talked about this before. There's a difference between nonviolence and sitting down. The way that you describe it, I haven't read the book, but the way that you describe it, those people sat down. They said, all right, yeah, we don't believe in violence, so you just come take us over.
No, they didn't say that.
I don't think that Gandhi, by any stretch of the imagination, while at the same time he was nonviolent, I do not believe that he ever for a moment anyone had an idea in their head that this was some guy who they could just walk all over.
I think they did at the beginning.
Okay.
And then they were disabused of that
exactly.
pretty quickly.
Exactly. I mean, that's my point that I'm making.
I don't see how that changes the reference.
What?
That Island sort of illustrates to me that the natural extension of if we took all the money we spend on our military, which according to one article I just read is more than the... We're like the top 15 armies in the world.
Yeah.
We spend more on our military than the other 14 combined.
Yeah, and then five of those are our allies in line.
Right. If we stop spending that amount of money...
Think of all we could get done.
All that we could get done. But if we totally took away the military and allowed ISIS to take us over, because their stated goal is we're infidels and should be subjugated,
uh-huh.
and they're right to do so...
So again, you've immediately included the words allowed ISIS to take us over. That is not part of nonviolence. Nonviolence does not say I'll allow anyone to walk all over me.
No, how will you resist someone with a gun? You'll stand in front of them, they'll shoot you, and they'll move to the next person.
And they'll move to the next person and shoot them. The same thing happened with Gandhi. Gandhi walked up to try and put his a letter in a box, and they pounded him down, and then the next person did, and they pounded him down, and then the next person that did it, and they pounded him down. And eventually something happened, didn't it? It was this huge revolution.
Yeah.
What is the tone of that yeah mean?
I just wonder, like I said, I haven't studied it enough to know what those circumstances were like to think that, well, it could work anywhere. And once again, it comes back to...
I feel like I
don't know that I would be willing myself. Okay, I'm a father, and I'm way beyond military age now. I'm getting close to retirement. But as a father, I don't know that I'm willing to stand by and let myself get shot so then they can point the gun at you
mm-hmm.
without me wanting to have a gun and say, no, you're not killing anybody else because I'm killing you.
Right.
And I know you and I have discussed, and I've discussed this with some of my friends. Some go, no, I would never do that. And I just... For me, I can't imagine that. And then I know I'd deal with the cost of what it would be like to have killed someone.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine what that would be.
Right.
But I cannot imagine myself sitting there and watch someone stab you or shoot you. And I go, well, I'm nonviolent.
But I don't think that you would be standing by and watching someone stab me or shoot me.
And I don't see how me standing in front of the knife and getting stabbed and then them grabbing you and stabbing you does anything to stop it. And I get philosophically that if millions of us did that, maybe it would work.
Wait, what do you mean maybe? Like you're looking at the proof of the
Hold on.
You're looking at the proof of the war, but you're not looking at the proof of the nonviolence. Sure, there have been fewer examples, but that's because violence is what is encouraged in the ethos of the world.
Right.
Violence has been what the world is for since humans could make weapons.
Right. You grab a rock and you hit the other guy with the rock.
Exactly.
I get that.
So, of course, there have been less examples. But unless someone starts to come along and change that, there are always going to be less examples. You can't say, well, because there are less examples, it's obvious that we should just continue the way things are. Because the way things are is rapidly spiraling down into a horrible, horrible world.
I mean, think that fits in this situation.
Since the Cold War, we have been the world has been in a state of
constant war.
Constant war, but more importantly, constant fear of annihilation.
Yeah.
At any moment, two sides of the world can completely destroy everything because of our advanced technology now.
Right.
So I can't understand how people are still advocating for this when look what it's gotten us.
Yeah.
If you are repeatedly trying a tactic that is getting you the opposite of what you want in the long term,
Then do it more.
That's Einstein's definition of insanity.
Right. I know. I get it.
I
hear totally what you're saying.
But it doesn't seem like you agree with it still. I don't understand that.
Yeah. My head is at war with my simian instincts, I guess would be the best way I could put it. And I haven't been able to wrap my head around how I would make your solution work. And I totally get what you're saying. I totally hear you.
I mean, in your quest for spirituality, is faith a necessity for you? Is faith something that as you conceptualize it, you say, yeah, this is something that I'm going to have in order to have a spirituality? No. You think that...
That's one of the reasons that sort of Buddhism appealed to me is the Buddha said, don't have faith in what I said. Try it.
Right.
And if it works, great. If it doesn't, then get rid of it and find something else.
Right. Okay, most people, I think, who have spirituality accept that there's some sort of faith needed in order to have that. You have to take a leap. You have to say, I'm going to believe this even though I know that there's no proof that this exists.
Okay.
Similarly, if you want to make a big change in the world,
mm-hmm.
I think that there are very few cases in which you're going to be able to say, okay, I know that this is going to work. I can wrap my head perfectly around how this is going to work. Therefore, I think that a leap of faith is required. If you want to make a change in the world, you have to take a leap of faith that something that you very strongly believe will work. Something like nonviolence.
But once again, if it's something that's untested...
It's not untested.
No, wait.
There are very few cases.
I'm going back to what you were saying.
Okay.
That you're believing that this will work.
Yes.
Believing based on what? And if it is just a leap of faith, as you call it, I would say there has to be some point that it rationally it leads you up to the point where you go, well, I have no concrete evidence, but based on the evidence I see, I'm going to make that leap that it will expand on.
And I think that Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr. Are perfect examples of that, of what you just said.
So because overall you see that it makes sense that it will work, and then you see these two examples, there may be others,
right.
But you see these two pretty big examples.
Yeah.
I mean, India and the United States.
On opposite sides of the world.
Right. Then you make the extension that it's got to work everywhere else on the world.
No, not that it's got to work. That I'm going to make a leap of faith that I hope that this will work everywhere else.
Okay.
And I hope to be able to apply it to the lives of people. Or not me, but I hope that people will apply it to their lives.
Got it. And we need to end there. That's a great ending, and
I definitely
want to chew on that.
But you're not putting in anything of yours. You're not putting in your conclusions. You can't end before that finishes. You just clarified my point. Now, what does that lead you to?
It's something I've got to think on more, because you and I have had this discussion, and I'm still kind of where I'm at, and you're kind of where you're at.
Okay, so your conclusion hasn't changed at all. Or is it that there's still stuff stirring in your head?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure. Because a lot of the time,
yes.
I feel like sometimes you'll chew on things and then you'll come back and you'll be like, you know? Yeah. And sometimes you'll chew on things and they just sort of digest and come out the other
end. Go away. No. I totally hear what you're saying.
Okay.
And I have no conclusion at this point.
Okay.
Because I hear what you're saying.
Okay.
So I'm not going to say what I said over again. That makes no sense.
For sure.
So I got to think about what you said.
Okay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. I know that's not as satisfactory as coming to a conclusion, but our time is up here for this one.
All right.
Thanks for talking. This is Perry Self.
I'm Sean Self.
And this has been Self Talk. Thanks for listening in. Bye.
We didn't even start it.
It never ends and it never starts.